Welcome to episode 359 of the Countdown Podcast, where we obsess over film in a way that makes you happy you're you. My name is Wayne.
Wonder where you're going with that.
Here's what it is. If you see how weird we are, you're like, yeah, I'm glad I'm not like them. And now I talk about movies. Bitch, please.
That's right.
That's the soundboard. And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. And Wayne hasn't even summarized or alluded.
I don't know how you do that.
In like, any way, shape, or form. Today is a return of the regular, irregular, semi-regular segment show. Top 10, Last 10, where we count down 10 of the most recent films we've seen from worst to best with nothing else linking them together other than that, and where we qualify where we're recommending to you from a certain point in that list. Now, Wayne, we've been doing this for almost 7 years, this show, and we've done a lot of these particular ones. Yeah. How does this week's list stand up versus some of the others?
So you're saying, do I have a definitive, here's where I recommend it?
Well, I'm saying, is it a good list, good 10 films? Is it a terrible, like my last top 10, last 10 from the last one at the end of last year, in October, was the last time we did this. Terrible list. Today, my list is much better.
I'm about, solid films. Yeah. I reckon I'm about half and half. Possibly a little on the shit side.
Okay.
But yeah, mostly.
Nothing's blowing my socks off. There's some good films.
Yes. Agree.
I don't have any 4-star or above bangers though. So.
Okay. That's okay. That's cool. Yeah, I'm a bit the same. I don't have, my number one is like, I had a great time here. I don't know if I'm telling you everyone that's going to be great.
Right.
That's
anything. Well, arguably that's my number one too. Yeah. So.
Okay.
All right, that's it. That's all the preamble we really need. If you're a regular listener to the show, you know what this is all about. If you're new to the show and you're like, oh, here's 20 mini reviews of potentially 20 different films, unless we cross over with one or two.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome. It's great to have you here.
Hello.
Guess you'll get to find a whole bunch of things that maybe you want to watch and a whole bunch that you shouldn't.
There you go.
That's the end result of these particular episodes. Then without any further ado, though, let's get into the segment which kicks it all off proper. Each week, it's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recap?
Who
wants a recap?
Who
wants a recap?
What went on this week, Paul?
Well, let's start with a review. And I think the only way to summarize this particular review is...
Oh, no, what's he going to do?
By referencing the particular quote that the review starts with.
Oh, God, I just... This is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here, time.
Okay. Yes, from Dedum Bomb, best movie pod of all, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here, time, 5 stars. Wayne, read us this one.
Oh, okay. He says...
Don't sound so enthused.
No. I was looking at his name is Dedam Bomb.
Dedam Bomb. Not Netflix. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah. I could be wrong, though. Yep. All right. He says, best movie pod of all, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here, time.
Already said that bit, but go on.
Thank you. He says, great banter. The list format keeps it fresh and it's always entertaining. It's just a great way to hang out with some good blokes who love movies for an hour or so each week. The reviews are great too. Always great suggestions to check out things and what to avoid. I've been listening for about 5 years and it's still one of my favorite must listens every week. Absolute legends, you guys. Also, release Reap. We made the Prazula Aruzu cut. It's only the Prazula cut. Thank you, Dedam Bomb.
Long time fan. Thank you so much for your review. And please do get involved in your particular podcatcher and leave reviews for the show. Help us get out to a wider audience.
All right.
Now, the only other bit of information / item for this week's recount is, of course, the result of last week's poll, episode 358, the superior lists of films based on a true story. Normally, I'm all salty when I lose.
Yeah, I haven't seen this. I haven't seen this.
Oh, you didn't vote for yourself this week. Good.
Oh, shit, I forgot. Yeah. Are we doing that now?
No, okay. I can see who's voted for who again. Good. Yeah, so it's all fine. Look, well done to you. A very easy 38-28 vote win.
Oh, I won?
Yeah. At one stage, it was 29-26, and it was kind of neck and neck.
I just assumed you'd win. Okay.
No. And in fact, this is why I can acknowledge. I get it. I got absolutely pelted for my choice of 3 billboards, which you called me out for on the show. Fair enough. I'll cop it on the chin. No complaints. Chris Yeaney said, for example, voting Wayne's Paul either flip-flopped on his opinion of The Revenant or just forgot about it. The awesomeness of Hugh Glass that didn't even hit his honorable mentions. Shaking my head. You're absolutely right. I did forget about that. So it should have been on my list, given that apparently is very much based on a true story. Matt Rochelle said, a vote for Paul for Goodfellas, but he almost lost me with 3 billboards. Fair enough. Great movie, but very loosely based. Braveheart was more accurate. I don't think it fit the brief. Yep. And I think a lot of people called me out for that particular one.
Okay.
John Ament, however, from the Pine and Comics podcast, recent guest on the show, said, Wayne's shitty hot take on Goodfellas cemented a poll vote.
That hit me pretty hard. That is a ridiculous
statement, sir.
Again, just for me, I like to skip the lady end.
Adam Lewis, a top level patron of the show, thank you, Adam, for your support, said Wayne had Benedict Cumberbatch with The Imitation Game as well as Catch Me If You Can. The man knows a good true story movie. Also, Paul left out Captain Phillips, which would have cemented his vote. Shame, Paul, shame. Sure, I did, but so did Wayne, Adam.
I haven't even seen Adam.
I guess maybe that's what Adam was alluding to. Fair enough there. Amanda Waddle said, I so badly wanted to vote for Wayne this week, but his love for Catch Me If You Can gave my vote straight to Paul. Fuck that movie, Wayne.
Really?
And your obsession with it.
And Amanda Waddle, I don't think I'm familiar with this kid. With
yeah, she's posted a few
Hello,
times.
Hello, Amanda. Before. Sorry about the Catch Me If You Can, but I am a weird man.
Yeah. Itchy on Fiddy on Survey said, I don't think Three Billboards counts as based on a true story. More inspired by true events. But not including Goodfellas because it's good at showing the downfall of Henryville is too big a slight. Got to go, Paul. So basically, that was your hot take.
Yeah.
But there are countless people calling me out for Three Billboards. So well done, sir. Good victory to you. That makes it 1-1 on the year.
Oh, there you are. We're scoring again. I forgot. Yeah. Okay. There you go.
We're scoring in so much as I totally forgot to celebrate my win last year.
Yeah. Well done, by the way.
Right. No, I mentioned it already. So no. It's just a nice way to get the listeners involved.
I love it.
We're looking for. That's it for this week's recap. Then let's get into it. Then the top 10, last 10 on the other side of this music cue. Here's the subject of this week's countdown.
I was really impressed with that. That performance was quite good. Well done, old man.
Thank you. We've been working on it all week. No, I hadn't, because it sits here, the mixer. All right. We've already talked about what the parameters are. Want me to go first?
Yeah, here you go. First.
My number 10. Not surprisingly, and this is, I think, what people like about this show is we get to shit on a few films and then we gradually work our way up to recommending them.
Totally.
My number 10 is the biggest piece of shit that I watched, and it came so close to my worst of last year's list.
Ooh.
But we didn't talk about it at all. It's Netflix's Red Notice. The most watched...
Oh, fucking hell! That's on my list!
The most watched film in Netflix history, by all accounts, directed by Rawson Marshall Thurber, starring, of course, The Rock, Ryan Reynolds, and Gal Gadot.
Yep.
What a massive, massive, steaming pile of manufactured shit. Please don't tell me it's your number one.
It's my number seven. It's my number seven. So I'm not saying it's good, but keep going, please.
1.5 stars. Look,
tell me what it's
about. I'm over it. I've seen the new trailer for Ryan Reynolds' new film. I watched it today, actually. The Adam Project.
Yeah.
Directed by Sean Levy.
It's like a kid's movie, though, right?
I don't know. I'm intrigued. I think it looks like a good adventure sci-fi film.
It's very dad sort of.
Yep.
Yeah. It's cool.
I'm a dad.
And I had one. So, yeah. No, any dad movies.
That sounds so dark. I should laugh at that comment.
No. Dude, any dad movies like motherfucking Shawshank Redemption or motherfucking Field of Dreams is big on dudes.
No, but
it's got a
little 12-year-old kid in it. And it's like, you know, adventure for that kid. I don't know. I'm open to it.
I love Ryan.
And the reason why I'm open to it is because it doesn't look like Ryan Reynolds is playing Ryan Reynolds. It looks like he might actually be acting a little bit. This film, Ryan Reynolds basically just woke up, rolled out of bed, just said, is my hair done? Here we go. I'm just going to be me. I'm sick of it. Fuck off, Ryan Reynolds. Do something. Act a bit. Go back to Barry. Do that. The Rock, you are done with trading in your charm. You are a shit actor. You're terrible. No one gives a fuck. And Gal Gadot, she brings the smoky hotness and whatever else. But even her,
you know what?
Her role is thankless and terrible.
Just on that point, Paul, I won't be this guy. I thought she was quite workaday looking in this film.
Oh, hang on. Looking?
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember not being bugging my eyes out or whatever. I'm just saying. No big thing. She's definitely pretty as hell.
My point is, none of them are good. The script, though, is an abomination.
So tell everyone what it's about, Paul. It's about, you want me to do it?
Yeah, please, go on.
Okay, so the Interpol issues this thing called a red notice, which is the highest level warrant or some shit, right? To capture the world's most wanted, like, thief, okay? And then Dwayne Johnson.
Which is Rai Rai,
right? So Dwayne Johnson
is... Except it's really not, because it's actually Gal Gadot.
That's right. So Rai Rai...
Twist!
...is a fucking, he's a Hammer Time thief, and so is Gal Gadot. And... The Rock is trying to chase down Ryan Reynolds, but he has to partner up with him against Gal Gadot, and then it takes them to, you know, hilarity ensues, or whatever, mayhem ensues.
There's one good action sequence, which is, again, early in the film, again, involves a scaffold. Don't know what it is about scaffolds.
Oh, yeah.
That part was fine. After that, it's just... plot contrivance versus plot contrivance to keep this film rolling towards its inevitable conclusion where, guess what? Because this is a grifter film.
Don't do it.
I'm not going to spoil it, but yeah. I'm just going to say, there's one final grift.
Well, the twist... Okay, let's face it here, okay? This is predictably cheesy. It looks good to okay. I would say that.
I thought that some of the effects were terrible.
That opening scene is beautifully filmed. There's a tracking shot from the aerial to the streets, then the following cars booming to the rock. Very cool. So there's a bit more effort that went in than normal, might say.
Where I really went from like, this is a 2.5 to 2-star film down to 1.5. Yeah. It's when they fucking did the big treasure Nazi vault and Ryan Reynolds just directly says, do-do-do-do!
Forget that. There's a moment in that scene where he points to a box called like, and the box has a label on it which says, what do you call it when it's the thing in a movie? The
MacGuffin?
The MacGuffin. There's a box that says MacGuffin. And actually says it there. Now, look, I understand that's all pure cheese, all right?
Action sequence, though, when they're driving out there, looks so terrible and was so badly filmed.
Isn't it like one of the highest Netflix?
It's the most watched.
Fucking, well, okay.
You put those three together and I get it. I get why people are watching it, but I just expect better.
There was a really good Jurassic Park joke in there when they were in the bull fighting ring and it's like, don't move, there's a bull. And they're like, you know, bitch, please. It's like, that's from Jurassic Park. It's like, no, I saw it on David Attenborough. No, it's Richard Attenborough. It's good shit. Oh, well, look.
With a horrendously shit-ass bad guy who rasps when he talks because he likes to strangle people the way he...
It's all pulpy. It's all pulpy. You know what I was thinking about with this type of thing, Paul, right? In Hollywood, you will often find people, like famous actors that you know, like a lot of really, really good comedians I know, they talk about how great they love Adam Sandler films.
And what?
They do it. Everyone, all these really high-end comedians go, yeah, I love that guy. Probably because he's their friend or whatever. But
yeah.
I think in Hollywood, the only actual measure of success is money. So a thing like this, Red Notice, you might think to yourself, Ryan Reynolds, and oh, I'm embarrassed to be in this thing. No. They're like, I am fucking the guy now. This is what they aim for.
Well, the problem is with these streaming giants and they release these films is we just don't know how much money it would have made. Right?
No, we don't. But
take COVID out of it. Might have opened to $150 million, and then the reviews rightly come out and fucking crucify it. And then next week it's down to 68%, and it only makes $50 million. And this film cost, from vague memory, $200 million to make.
Yeah. So here's how it would work, right? There's a bit going on because they're still in their stage where they're in debt. But if Netflix, they know how much this is worth to them in subscriptions.
Yeah,
if it gets this many views, it's worth this much.
No, for Netflix, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I get it.
So, but it's a really odd model because they have so much money to throw 200, 300, 100, whatever at these productions. And they're not seeing any of that return. Not yet, right? If you look at their books, they're not in the green.
Go listen to Netflix and Swill where Dan Brennick is all across this shit. But
right, so he'd be up there. So the break-even point is like still years from now. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yet that stock is going insane. So
oh no, but then it had a huge drop recently.
Did it really?
Yeah, big massive drop off. I can't remember what caused it, but there was something that happened where it just dropped right away. I'm like, I almost got on board.
Dude, buying opportunity straight away. Yeah. All right. So yeah, okay. Oh, okay.
All right, that's my number 10. Wayne's number 7, Red Notice. He must have some absolute shit on his list.
In Red Notice, he's like, I'm Ed Sheeran, bitch. I was in Game of Thrones. That was pretty funny. There's Ed Sheeran in there. You know?
The look on my face right now is exactly the look out of my face watching that moment.
I still maintain it's better than that last Bruckheimer piece. No, that one fucking...
No, Six Underground? Yeah. I'd rather watch Six Underground.
Oh, come on, man. Sorry. This one... Oh,
I know that one offended you, but
that's
one...
That's tough, man.
And it's not much better, but I think I gave that one 2.5 stars. Maybe even 2 stars. It's dumb as fuck, but at least it was better filmed. Better lens, and I had some more inventive action sequences. That's all I can say for it.
Yeah, okay. Look, fair enough. All right, my number 10, everyone. Since the advent of Spider-Man No Way Home, I thought to myself, I might go check out those Andy Garfield ones. See if they're any good, right? And so I saw all two, and they're both in my list. But number 10, the worst... is The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Thank God. Okay. If you had that one above the first one, I'd have been like, what?
Nope. Because here's the thing, right? So, I mean, I'll give you basically the plot is Spider-Man is now Spider-Man. He's a bit more confident. He's got his girl, Gwen Stacy. Electro turns up. There's a bit of fucking Harry Osborn shit to returning as well. All I can tell you is it's shit. There's some nice sweet swinging scenes at the beginning that look kind of cool.
There's also a pretty good Hans Zimmer soundtrack.
There you go. The music. Actually, the music was good. The production seemed better than it was.
Like, yeah, it was very
And then they have like, you know, I thought Paul
that was a perfect rendition. I totally knew what I was doing.
I knew it immediately. No, but like Paul Giamatti, like the bad guy. Well, I like Paul Giamatti, the bad guy.
Oh, hardly... from like 12 seconds.
12 seconds! I thought he was the big... Nope, it's just at the beginning. Now, this is weird. Spider-Man whistles his own theme song like, that while he's dispatching criminals. I'm like, what kind of decision was that?
Mm, and then he's that's actually... your biggest problem with the film?
No, he's portrayed as cool. Like, he kisses Gwen Stacy on stage at a graduation and high-fives the dean. He's kind of a rebel. He's not the Peter Parker
no,
that you...
No, that was a big problem with these films, that Andrew Garfield was too cool.
He was too cool.
School and Spider-Man.
And he's actually, frankly, he's kind of a dick. Like, mm-hmm. he's a bit of a dick to her. He's a bit forceful in his pursuit of her. And
he's always got that, more so, I think, than Tom Holland and certainly Tobey Maguire. He's got that, he's always making a quip. Always, like, and some of them are hurt. Like,
no, they're not. They're not.
They're crossing the line.
They're not fun. What it is he's a bit of a dick. So you're like, well, I don't know if I like that or not. And what happens is the dialogue is horrendous. The Dane DeHaan, it just doesn't work at all. You know, I don't mind Dane DeHaan. I just like, I don't know what's going on. You know what? It was that fucking Jupiter fucking ass movie.
No, Valerian.
Valerian, that one. That he was, anyway, sorry. But what was interesting to me is that this Spider-Man in this movie is not one bit the Andrew Garfield that turned up in Spider-Man No Way Home.
No, that was a course correction.
The idea there is that either
it's redemption.
Yeah.
No Way Home is, hang on, that's a massive spoiler.
I think at this stage everyone knows, right? Let's just say everyone knows. Come on, guys.
Film's been out for 2 months.
Dude, the internet spoiled it way before us. If you haven't seen Spider-Man No Way Home, you still know what we're talking about, so don't even worry about it. It's all good in the hood, bro.
Send your hate mail to Wayne, not me.
It's fine. I'm sure no one's good. They might just do it for fun. Anyway. All right. So anyway, but like I say, this is why the guy in Andrew Garfield was so likable in that film, in the new Spider-Man film, that it's completely a different character now. And this movie goes for fucking 2 hours and 20 minutes, man. That's fucked up. So yeah, it's an absolute piece of shit, this one. I had heard on the grapevine, obviously the lying grapevine, that people like underground saying, hey, this Jamie Foxx is a great character. No, man, it's all shit.
No.
So don't even worry about it. If you haven't seen 1 or 2, I say skip them both. You'll see them. Anyway, but yeah, you're fine with that.
Look, I kind of made my family watch both those films in preparation for No Way Home so they could fully appreciate what was going on through the course of that. And
did they dislike them? Both?
Look, my daughter's the right age to like everything, so she was fine with it.
Okay, that's good.
I don't think my wife hated them either. Well, what would you give this score as a score?
No, it's shit. It's actually still a bad film.
I agree, 100%.
It's like a fucking, it's between a 3 and a 4 out of 10.
Yep. Yeah, I'd go 3 out of 10 for me, around about 30. Okay, well, look, my number 9 is sadly, I was enthused by the concept.
Oh, that makes it worse.
Of this film.
When you're looking forward to it at this point.
That Paul W.S. Anderson had finally fucked off away from Resident Evil.
Surely not.
And taken Alice, a.k.a. Mila Jovovich, with him.
Everyone, Jovovich is how Paul thinks her name goes.
Set us off now. It literally is that in my head every time I read it.
I'm sticking with that. Fuck it, go.
And they made Resident Evil... Is it colon? I hope it's colon. Colon! Welcome to Raccoon City.
Oh, wait. Oh, you saw this thing.
Yeah. Starring Crawl alum Kaya Scodelario.
Oh, I love her.
Robbie Amell. Hannah John Kamen from Ant-Man and the Wasp. She was the ghost.
Oh, yep.
And then Donald Logue and Neil McDonough were the only other people of any recognizable merit in this particular cast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's directed by Johannes Roberts. I think actually he's correct. He's saying Johannes this time. And it's terrible. It's just shit. It's more gory and it's more R-rated and there's blood and guts. But otherwise, this film is terrible too. This film is way worse than the first Resident Evil film that Paul W.S. Anderson did. Way worse.
The first one was good. The first and second Resident Evils were good.
I love the second 50% one. Of what you said there is correct.
I love the second one. Sienna Guillory.
But what they did was they tried to combine, I think, from what I read,
yeah,
I did play them haphazardly, but I don't remember playing them and loving them that much. Resident Evil 1 and 2 storyline. So
you played the game. Oh, okay.
We've both got the mansion storyline and then the Raccoon City storyline going on with Jill Valentine. This is one of those films where they have to establish for the fans of the game that this particular character, i.e. Hannah John Kamen, is Jill Valentine. So she will say 7 times in the first 30 minutes of the film, I'm Jill Valentine.
Okay. All right. Exposition. Over exposition.
But it's awkward and cringy.
Yeah, yeah.
The effects aren't up to the budget. Some of them are terrible.
That's a studio going, hey, listen, you need to say her name 7 times in the first act or some shit, right? Can I ask you this? Any chance she's wearing the outfit, like the dress with the boots?
No, she's not.
No,
not
so,
even,
so they're not going she's that
a cop.
Far back.
She's a cop in the film.
Oh, okay. Mm. Oh, well, there you are.
Yeah, the effects are garbage. Nothing makes sense, yeah. Like, in the plot in this film. Nothing at all makes sense. People, like, they try and... He tries to create this interesting sort of one-shot once or twice.
Yeah. Is Paul W.S. Anderson a producer?
Yes.
Okay, so let me ask you this. There was one Resident Evil where they were all on the rooftop of a building. I don't know if you remember this one or not.
No, thankfully I've excised this from my brain.
Yeah, okay. It's a bit of that one, but you know what? It probably isn't, because that one, it was shit, but it was like...
This is better than the last two or three Resident Evil films, for sure. Okay. But when you started with, I'm just comparing first Resident Evil versus first Resident Evil. This is worse than that one.
So hang on, has this got Mila Jovovich's character in it?
Nope.
Oh, so it's a whole different thing.
Yeah. That she was created for the game, for the movie. Sorry, I don't think she ever existed in the game.
I didn't know that.
This is, from what I understand. Jeez, I feel like I could be wrong on that. Please let us know. I'm sorry.
Come at us.
But I don't believe Alice is a character in the game.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, let me...
Sienna Gilroy, I think.
Gilroy is
Jill Valentine.
Oh, so there's that character again.
Yes.
With the blue top.
Yeah, I could be wrong.
And the dark hair. Yeah. I'm a fan. All right. Okay, cool. So, but I won't be watching this.
Don't.
Okay. Is there any reason to watch this?
No.
None. Okay, fine. No,
it's garbage. There's one reason to watch this film. A while back, we had Fans on Patrol.
Yeah.
Montego Bradley and Tipperbot on the show. This is Tipperbot's number one film of the year last year.
What? See, now I might watch it, eh? All right. Damn.
I don't think Tipperbot listens to us.
Well, she doesn't anymore.
But if you do, for the love of God, please. You got to hand in your review card.
If you're out there, Tiff, hit us back. Yep. Hit us back. I want
to
hear
the
conversation.
And apologize to everyone for steering them. Because that was the main reason in the end why I went, well, fucking Tipperbot loves it. I'm going to give it a shot. God damn you, Tipperbot.
No, I want to watch it. Okay, look forward to that next Top 10 Past Last 10. Fantastic. Nice one, old man.
All right, what's your number 9?
My number 9 is a film that we got an advance screening for and I couldn't make it and neither could you. The 355.
Oh, I've tried to watch this 3 times. I'm still only an hour in.
Oh, good. All right, good. Well, allow me to, allay some of your fears and time. Everyone, the 355, first of all, it's got Jessica Chastain, the Winter Soldier, fucking Lupita.
No. He's not important. Jessica Chastain, yeah. Lupita Nyong'o,
Penelope Cruz,
Diane Kruger, and some random Chinese chick who's only just turned up where I'm up to in the film.
Right. Now, and that's what I thought. I thought, hey, I think, is that not three
her
Oscar...
Her name's like Fang Fang Bang Bang B.I.
Everyone's name's that.
No, Fang Fang Bing Bang. I don't know, some shit like that.
You should stop.
Did make me laugh though when I read her name in the credits.
Okay, so I think, I'm not sure, I think I did a count here. It might be 3 Oscar winners and 1 Golden Globe winner. That's the cast here.
You've done
right?
More research than I have.
Yeah, so they all seem to be ex-CIA agent type people, all right? And they join forces with this rival German agent, which is the what's the blonde girl?
Diane Kruger.
This computer specialist guy and a Colombian psychologist. Long story short, it's your typical spy thriller where some top secret weapon can fall into the hands of a group of bad guys and then the 4 women have to go on their own, away from the agency, still having wicked technology that no one knows where they got it from, and go and save the world. Now, I love Jessica Chastain. This is well known. She has no idea how to fight, or the choreographer didn't do anything. She's trying to sell the idea that she can fight, and she's kicking like this girly kick, and the guy's flying across the room. And I'm like, that's just really bad. That was really bad, right?
If you're playing along at home, nothing incenses Wayne more about anything about a film than when a small person can somehow make someone launch across the room who's not supernaturally empowered.
I'm a pretty small person, and I can't do it, right? And I've tried. In my youth. So yes, but anyway, so that was it. I didn't even know the Winter Soldier was in it, and he barely is. There's weird shit going on in here where there's a foot chase through Paris, and Jessica Chastain's chasing another woman, and there's dust-ups, and like weird things happen. Like the bad guy's got a gun, but they don't pull it to the last minute. I'm like, that's not how fights go. Don't do that, okay? It's not exciting for some reason. The reason you couldn't get past an hour is that for some reason it's not exciting. It's a mix of average editing and cinematography and choreography. And you know what the problem is? It's the dialogue. It's a real problem apart from all that.
Yeah, you're not
it's
wrong.
It's a little bit the cinematography, but it's also the dialogue. The bad dialogue is making Jessica Chastain, Golden Globe actress, or a bad actor.
She's a producer on this movie, Wayne.
Dude, She's got to stick to acting. And these are, I mean, so hokey is the dialogue that it actually destroys the scene. And some of this shit doesn't make sense. And there's this, the big gambit is this drive, right?
Yeah, the MacGuffin.
Basically, all the world's problems would be solved if it was just destroyed. And they refuse to do it for some reason. And I'm like, what are you? That would solve everything. Okay, fuck it. So anyway, it's really, really bad, and I'm really disappointed because I thought this would be cool. I saw an article about this saying this is the first big flop of 2022.
Not wrong. Look, it was always in trouble because it was slated to come out, I think, in January.
Oh, right.
Right. Any film comes out in January, other than something like Scream and whatever else, it's not normally, they're not expecting big things from it, right?
Well, I guess so. Oh, yeah, you're right. And you know what? I it's so bad that it caused me to look up the director.
Guy did Dark fucking Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix.
He wrote some of the worst X-Men films.
Yes. You know what's happened here? He's actually...
Simon Kinberg.
Simon Kinberg has directed like 3 films, including this one or 4, right? He's been a producer on like 200 films. So that's what's going on. He's got a lot of money and power and back. Yeah, I want to do a film. Boom.
Yeah, he's got a terrible pedigree and I... Yeah, 100%.
Horrendous.
Agree.
Horrendous.
All right. My number 8 is a film which is based on, I believe, a play which was written by the guy who directed this movie, who also stars in the film, John Polono. It's called Small Engine Repair.
I've heard of this. Go on.
Yeah, so it stars John Bernthal, Shea Whingham, no one else of note really in the film. And it basically follows a casual reunion of 3 old friends in an out-of-the-way repair shop, but it masks a hidden agenda by the guy who called them together, which is way more intriguing than the actual film is.
Uh-oh.
Because this follows these 3 friends from the moment that the lead character gets out of jail. And he went into jail for whatever he did, due to his anger problems. He beat the fuck out of someone and maybe killed them. I can't remember. And he comes out of jail and his 2 friends have somehow been tasked with looking after his young daughter. And that's Shea Whingham and John Bernthal.
Yep.
And then we flash forward in time to when the young daughter, who's 4 or 5 at that point in time, is now an 18-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And they're all still mates and whatever else. And they have this big punch up in a bar somewhere. And they have a falling out, and we fast forward another year, and the guy who's the father of the daughter calls the other 2 guys together to try and mend the bonds that have been broken.
Yeah,
but he has a hidden agenda.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to spoil anything more than that. But this is
that sounds okay. I guess it's not
102-minute film, which honestly, it's mostly all in the small engine repair shop. Hence the play like nature of it.
Yep,
it spends an hour and change. I'm talking 70 minutes this film is spinning its wheels, setting up its characters, which has been done by the 30-minute mark.
Oh, no.
No problem at all. There's a 40 minutes this film where nothing happens, but we repeat the same beats over and over and over again. Now, this has a 3.5-star rating on Letterboxd, and the critics love the shit out of it because it's very well acted. No arguments whatsoever. Everybody occupies their role well. It's not well filmed, and the plot is boring as fuck. And when it finally gets to where it's going, yes, the last 25 minutes comes alive.
Yeah. I hate that. If you're just beating me over the head with the same thing and I don't learn anything new, it becomes like, well, then there better be something really cool about this scene that is a reason for you to leave it in. And if there isn't, it's shit. So
I'm not, if someone's like, all I want is acting tour de forces, then this film is for you.
Okay.
But if you want a plot which justifies its length of time.
Yeah.
In other words, you don't want to play.
Yeah. This is it. But Glenn Ross was a prey, and that was just this.
My memory of that film is very, very positive. I haven't watched it since
it's intense.
Since the 90s.
Because, it's just camera whipping, whipping, whipping. It's like that. So it's very kinetic. And then you're doing a play, you have to do that. You have to move around the set. So, I mean, because you can't if you're just sitting there, but that's why it's a movie. So, okay.
I don't recommend it for someone who's got my tastes.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, if you're into that kind of thing, just want acting.
I might like it. I might like
it. Give it a shot.
Because I do like that. Okay. Small Engine Repair. Nice one. My number 8 is called The Wedding Ringer. Now, everyone.
Not ringers.
Nope. Ringer.
Ringer.
You're thinking of the Wedding Crashers.
I am.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is a Kevin Hart movie, so I knew Paul would love it. All right? Now, I heard it was an R-rated comedy, and I don't share Paul's hatred for Kevin Hart. Right? So it's about Josh Gad, who's marrying...
Oh, God, you can add him to my list of fucking people I hate.
He's done a couple good things, Josh Gad. He's like, did you see...
Little Monsters.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of an indie cred or something, apparently. Anyway, Josh Gad is marrying Penny from The Big Bang Theory in this movie, which is already unbelievable, right?
That's even less believable than Leonard.
But that's the point.
Penny, you could do better.
Well, this is the point of the film, right? He doesn't actually have any friends, and he's well-to-do, you see? So I think that's what's going on here. But he has a woman who's out of his league, so he'll do anything to keep her and to make the wedding go well. Because he has no friends, he got no groomsmen, so he, in desperation, hires Kevin Hart, who runs a business, pretending to be a best man.
So a guy who's got no friends and looks like Joss Gad can pull a woman that looks like Penny.
Well, I think that's the conceit of the film is that, of course, he couldn't get her in real life, so now he's really insecure about losing her by not having groomsmen at his wedding. So that's what's giving him the impetus to go as far
that's
as to hire.
That's what's going
to
get. That's what's going to lose her.
Well, he's got.
How the fuck have they even got to marriage stakes? Well, why on date three when she went, you've got no friends?
But that's the thing, though. I think he would be like an insecure sort of nobody kind of guy.
This is terrible. Go on.
I know. I'm saying it's the premise of the comedy. So it is a step, I will say, above your standard Kevin Hart fare, but that isn't really saying that much. I still don't recommend it. The laughs are.
Stop. It's not your right.
Well, the laughs are R-rated, which is good. There's only one scene I could point to which gave me proper laughs, which is a lot more than other shows like this.
Supposed comedies.
Yeah, I will say that Olivia Thirlby, whatever her name is, right? For some reason, I was actively struck by how pretty she was in this film. I always thought she was like that.
I think she's the dying girl, and me and Ellen, the dying girl.
Yeah, and she was in fucking.
No. She was in Dread.
Dread? Yes, no, she was.
I'm
she
mixing
was.
Up characters. Sorry, yes. I was thinking Olivia Cooke.
Yeah, she was in Dread. And Juno and stuff like that. She was a kid and stuff like that. But there is one mildly surprising turn of events, which does allow for a certain outcome. But still, it's exactly what you think it is. And do not watch this film. There you go. Wedding Ringer. Just avoid.
All right. My number 7 is where I will recommend to those who are into the genre. And in this case, it's a horror film.
What a shock!
Yeah, but it's directed by a bloke who has directed the following films. Black Mass, Out of the Furnace, and Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges. Yeah.
Okay. Dramatic. All right.
This is from Scott Cooper. It's called Antlers. And from memory, Guillermo del Toro is a producer on the film. It basically follows a kid whose father and brother are turning into monsters, having run into some form of creature.
That bit them or something.
Yeah, that bit them.
Yep.
And he's trying to keep them alive. He's got nothing but in this really out of the way, down trodden, decrepit part of America, right? And it stars Kerry Russell is a teacher who becomes aware of this kid and hang on, something's going wrong with him.
Has she got long hair?
Yes.
Ooh, excellent. Go on.
And her brother is played by Jesse Plemons, and he's the town sheriff.
Yeah. Everyone loves Jesse Plemons, don't they?
Yeah.
Go on.
That's basically the setup.
It sounds really dark.
It's very dark in tone. It's also an allegory for drugs are bad, okay?
Oh, okay.
So that's what you need to know going. And it really smashes the shit out of that over and over and over again in a way.
What number is this for you? Eight?
Seven.
Okay.
That said, it's fine.
Fine.
It's a horror film. It's a soft 3 stars. I wouldn't say it's entirely predictable. And I will say there are some very good scenes that are well filmed. Scott Cooper knows what he's doing. Darkness is used very well in this movie.
Okay.
So the lighting's stellar.
And if you're into it, that is actually a mix of.
But I wouldn't recommend to you. Don't bother.
No. I won't. But I would say if you like horrors and you're saying this is okay to 3 stars.
Yep.
That's not bad.
Yep. That's it.
Very nice. My number 7 is Red Notice. So we're back to you, son.
Okay. My number 6 is the oldest film on my list. It's from 1981. It's Time Bandits, directed by Terry Gilliam from Monty Python fame.
Shit.
I don't know where I got this idea from, but I need to see it. Somewhere along the line, we talked about 1981 films, and Time Bandits was a hole in that.
Is this the man from Snowy River?
No.
Okay, sorry. I think, sorry.
Terry Gilliam is part of Monty Python.
No, the lead, though.
The lead?
Yeah, who's the lead?
A kid named Craig Warnock.
Oh, okay. I'm completely thinking of a different film. Sorry. The man from Snowy River was in a movie that sounded like Time Bandits. Sorry.
Okay.
Tom Burlington. I'm sorry. All right,
this film does feature Ian Holm, John Cleese, Sean Connery, which completely blew my mind when he popped up. Michael Palin, of course. Shelley Duvall.
You're bashed.
David Warner. So there's a lot of, and then a whole bunch of people who are, I believe the correct term these days is little people, including Kenny Baker, so R2-D2.
Oh, yeah.
David Rappaport, Mike Edmonds, Malcolm Dixon, Tiny Ross, that's an unfortunate name, Jack Purvis. And it basically follows a kid who goes to bed one night and some kind of time vortex portal opens up and these six little people come running out into his room and he gets taken away with them on an adventure. So it's kind of like an adventure film, but from the mind of Terry Gilliam, the guy who did 12 Monkeys.
He's hit and miss with me, that Terry Gilliam guy.
Yep.
His stuff does look good, though.
This is very informed of the time of Monty Python's Flying Circus. There are some shit in this film. Every time you think you got a handle around it, it just goes more batshit crazy again.
In a way that's good, like satisfying or good? No? No?
It got too much for me by the end.
Yeah.
I will say through the middle of the film, I was on board. I was enjoying it. They're bouncing between times and these little people are trying. They've taken a map from the creator and are trying to steal all this cool shit because they've been mistreated by the creator, who's basically God.
Oh. Right?
And God is chasing them through these time things. And they flash into the Middle Ages and they flash into Roman times Greek Roman times, not sure. And Sean Connery is the king at that point.
Was it good for its time, this movie?
Yeah, mostly. Obviously, 40 years later, the effects don't stand up, but that's fine. But then when we get to shit like, they flash into this time period where there's a ship of a ogre, I think that's what he, I can't remember, and the ogre's wife looks normal and human. But then when they take over the ship, it turns out it's on the top. It's the hat of a giant walking beneath the waves of the ocean for no reason whatsoever. I'm like, huh?
Okay.
You've completely lost
me. No, that's him. Terry Gilliam. Have you seen Brothers Grimm?
Yes.
That movie is like beautiful and great. And this is an expensive, great, beautiful movie that doesn't work. That's what it is. Because he does some weird shit and you're like, and it really derails you. That seems like he hasn't learned.
David Warner, who's in lots and lots of films, he was one of the bad guys. Or was he captain or one of the bad guys in Titanic? I can't remember. But he plays literally evil.
Okay.
Evil is trying to get the map, because if he gets the map that the little people hold, then he can take over reality or some shit. So
okay.
It's the kind of film where at the end someone touches a microwave holding evil and explodes just because.
So not recommended then?
No, I do recommend
it. Oh, you do recommend
it? If you're into that kind of thing. It's absurdist comedy adventure. From a time which this would never be made.
Yeah,
now.
It sounds like it was the type of thing that would be popular and culty now an 80s film. Okay, cool. Well, my number six is the original Amazing Spider-Man, and I can tell you something different about this film.
It was obviously a much better film.
It was a better film.
Would you recommend this one? To superhero fans, to its audience.
Okay, but only to sort of, to up your street cred because you've seen all the Spider-Mans. That's it, all right?
Otherwise?
I think I'd rather eat some piss. Well, all right. So this one here, I find it interesting immediately that they didn't go with the muscular Spider-Man thing. Andrew Garfield is very slight.
Speaking for slight men out there, good.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're not. I wouldn't call you slight. He's very, he's really skinny.
Well, look, I'm not 20 years old anymore.
No, but, yeah, anyway. So they really doubled
down. Thanks for noticing.
Muscular code, man. That's what I meant. So, no MJ, Gwen Stacy only. They really double down on the Flash as a douche thing on this one. But it does have a few charming things about it. It feels like a Richard Linklater film. In if you watch,
whoa,
dude, whoa. There's when he finds out that he's Spider-Man, right?
Whoa!
No, it does. I'll tell you this, right? There's a scene in this where there's this very strummy, folksy music over the montage of him discovering his new powers. It is played low key and kind of twee or something. It's this unexpected.
What
performance.
Is your major malfunction?
I'm telling you, man.
I love this show. I love our show. I love that every so often you surprise me so much. I lost for a soundboard.
Thank God.
Richard Linklater has never in the history of time / film review been linked to an Amazing Spider-Man film.
You know what? It's a little Michel Gondry too. I'm just saying that. Okay, it's like emo Spider-Man. It's a very angsty kind of film, and definitely not like the other Spider-Man films. I think the brief was when this came out.
Have you not seen Spider-Man 3?
No, Spider-Man 3 is polished, man, in its way. This is actually kind of slightly
emo.
Dank. Yeah, it's emo. This is emo Spider-Man.
I'm saying Spider-Man 3 was emo.
Nah, Spider-Man. Oh, 3. Which one's 3? Like the
one where he turns into the symbiote.
Oh, no. That was flashy in a way that this is not.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it doesn't like, it shows the evolution of the suit and all that sort of things. But what was weird about it was that obviously they had done this movie right after the Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans. And they're
right
like.
After there was, what, 2011? It was like. Was it 2011?
It was years later, not sort of a few years later. Yeah, right? But everyone was like, holy shit, you're doing another Spider-Man. Because, of course, Sony had to do it for the rights. So what they obviously said to. I can't remember who directed it. I'm sorry. But Mark Webb, excellent. Is like, do whatever you want, man. We just have to make a movie, so shit something out, right? And he was like, you know what? I'm going to do whatever I want here. And he actually is trying to not make it like every other Spider-Man.
Just shit something out.
That's an interesting term.
Clearly having his fucking, his listening devices in the boardroom meeting.
Well, look at this way, right? The Green Goblin, where he fights his own ego in his head, there's one of those scenes, but it's nowhere near as good as the Willem Dafoe mirror thing.
No.
So ultimately, this is just a bit too slow, but I will tell you that I was slightly pleasantly surprised by the fact that it's actually played so low-key.
I had it up now, I'd play this soundbite. I think I'd rather eat some piss.
Well, you doing it is just fine, Paul.
That's number six.
Number six.
Your list is fucking pants.
It's ass sandwiches and fries, man. Don't even worry about it.
All right, then. On that note, my number five, to kick off the top half of the list, is definitely a film I recommend if you're into his films. Now, if you're not, this is not going to convince you otherwise, because this might be the most Wes Anderson of all Wes Anderson films.
Oh, no. This should be interesting. You speak, of course, of...
The French Dispatch.
Right. I was going to watch this film, and
you should watch it. You're a Wes Anderson fan.
I am a Wes Anderson fan.
Absolutely got to watch it, then. This is it's a story about a newspaper, I guess, that is in France. And
French, yep.
French. Bill Murray is the editor-in-chief on that newspaper, and effectively he dies just of old age. Mm-hmm. And they put out one last publication, which is kind of in honor of him. And everything that is French Dispatchian about this newspaper is put out there. And so it's three major stories about the ways paper operates and how the articles came to be what they are.
Okay.
That's the link together. So it's basically an anthology film strung together by that, while we flash back to when he's alive and talk about each of the writers and why they're writing the story and then depicting the story on screen. And I just, over time, I've grown to appreciate it.
Whoa. This is big, everyone. Now, how did you feel about the Grand Budapest Hotel?
That's my favorite of his films.
Okay, good.
By a long way so far.
Not Bottle Rocket?
No, Bottle Rocket's been superseded. Yeah, I don't think it was shot the same way. I think it was his first film.
No, that
was still finding his style and whatever.
So is this Wes Anderson?
I want to go back and see. I'm going to go and watch his other films. Steve Zissou, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, and Moonrise Kingdom. There's a couple others I've missed as well.
Yeah.
Rushmore
and the Tenenbaums, is that him?
Yes, yeah. The Royal Tenenbaums. I've seen none of those films.
I haven't seen him either.
I just love the way he moves the camera in this kind of very, how do I describe it? I like the way he moves it across.
Yeah, he's floaty. He's I know what you mean.
And there's a lot of shit going on in the background of his shots that really intrigue me.
Is it like, because you know how in the Grand Budapest Hotel, they would just kill the lights behind a scene and then all of a sudden it would change?
All of that.
Is it like that?
All of that.
Okay, I'll watch
that. And more. You absolutely should watch. If you like the Grand Budapest Hotel, this film's actually, and I reckon this to anyone who likes Wes Anderson, if you hate him, because I think he is an acquired taste.
Yeah.
But he's an auteur. There's no question he's an auteur because you know immediately, maybe Bottle Rocket accepted.
Yeah.
Any other film I've seen of his, you know immediately, this is immediately, within 5 minutes, this is a Wes Anderson film.
I love that.
Including Isle of Dogs. The camera moves the same way.
Yeah.
Even though it's claymation. Have you not seen Isle of Dogs?
No.
Oh my God, Wayne.
Really?
That is your next watch, sir.
Okay.
You will.
Where's my phone? Yeah.
Absolutely love the shit out of that film.
Isle of Dogs. Okay, good. All right. Oh, good. Shit.
Look, I'm going to bold statement here. That's not in your top 10. Animated, it's claymation, animated films animated of all time, I'll be stunned.
Really?
Yep.
All right.
Because it's about dogs.
Yeah.
And it's got Wes Anderson's sensibilities.
You're right. What would he do with a fucking claymation?
Oh, the other one of his films I've seen is The Fantastic Mr. Fox. Same deal.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that's what he would do. I've seen that one too.
If you've seen that one,
I love that one. George Clooney, man. What the fuck?
Isle of Dogs is the same deal, man.
Word. That's nice.
Okay.
That's nice.
There. Back to you.
Cool. My number five is a film that only just came out. It's called Last Looks. Check this out, right? It's Charlie Hunnam, right? Hang on. Mel Gibson. Oh, come on. All right. So, all right, here it is, right? So, Charlie Hunnam's playing this cop named Waldo, who's a former cop who left the force, and he's living a life of he's a disgraced ex-super cop, rather. He's actually, something bad happened to him in his career.
He's already a super cop.
Yeah, he was like the youngest captain of some shit. And he's
drawn. Of course he was.
Yeah, and so what happens is now he's off the grid, and he lives in this fucking caravan just outside LA in like the woods and shit like that.
Riggs!
It's a bit Riggsy, but not, because he's a minimalist and he meditates, and he only allows himself to own 100 things. Right, including like a toaster and a bicycle and whatever. Right,
only and a pair of underwear.
Pair of underwear. He's only got one outfit. You know what I'm saying? Like that kind of thing.
Wow. Okay?
Marina Baccarin is also in this. All right.
Now and you had my attention.
Uh huh.
Now you have my interest.
Okay, good. Because the actual movie is about him being drawn to become a private detective for this actor who is Mel Gibson, who's playing an English actor who's really, really good, and he's in this TV show that's on whatever in Hollywood. Right. And he's suspected of having killed his wife. And no one really knows what's going on. Okay. And there's a lot of stuff going on there. Now, the show looks great, Mel Gibson is playing that. He's like blackout drunk, by the way, this actor. He's like, he's just always, always drunk. And he doesn't know if he killed his wife either because he's always fucking unconscious.
He doesn't know.
He woke up in the morning and she was dead.
I reckon you know.
He is actually saying to Charlie Hunnam, like, listen, if you really are a good detective, like they all say, and I turn out to be the person who killed my wife, then I'll go to fucking jail. That's it. Like that's how it is, right? So
okay, it's intriguing. That part intrigues me.
Now, the actual
Marina Baccarin's not his wife, is she?
She is.
Because that would be creepy and wrong.
She's not. Good. She's not. You'll be fine with that. She's not in it a whole lot, though. I'll tell you that, right? Even though she has second billing. So, really? I know. And Mel Gibson's got the and credit, so whatever. But anyway.
Of course he does.
Yeah. So, but this is really, it's a decidedly entertaining whodunit film. It is a whodunit film.
Okay, what's it called again?
It's called Last Looks. Okay. And the plot is, I wouldn't say often incoherent, but no character is generic. I'll put it that way. Okay. Right? I don't want to tell you it's the shit, because it's not.
What's right? Number four?
Yeah, it's number four. But
you watch a lot of good films.
Put it this way, as whodunits go, I sort of enjoyed this one. It's not as good in terms of its quality, but I enjoyed this one more than Knives Out, yeah.
You enjoy this more than Knives Out? So if we did a top 10 last 10 with Knives Out included, this would be under four.
It'd be under five. Like I said, it's not as good a film, but it's a little bit more enjoyable to me. I laughed more in this film. How's that? Does that make sense? Knives Out is an undecidedly better film, but I like this one a little bit better. That makes sense. It's totally fine.
Hot damn! Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big call.
Well, the thing is, I really wanted to love Knives Out, and I didn't. I was a little bit disappointed about it, so I'm a little bit down on that film. Like, I knew who the bad guy was. I fucking saw it as soon as I looked at him. Anyway, so there you are. Last looks, wow. Everyone.
Well, you heard your hot take for tonight's episode, ladies. Or today's episode, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, there you go.
My number four is a film we briefly spoke about in some context or another on the show. It's called Cop Shop.
Oh, yeah. Great show. Great fucking show.
Directed by Joe Carnahan, who is a bit of a fave around these parts.
Mm-hmm.
His second film that came out in 2021 is not as good as Boss Level. It's nowhere near as good as Boss Level.
I would agree.
However, it is an entertaining, well-shot, and well-thought-through film. With one massive exception that stops it from being really great.
What? Can you say?
At one point in the film, we sideline our three major characters in a massive way, and they sit there for 30 minutes of runtime.
Yeah.
And that part of the film lags like fuck.
It's a shame.
So that's not Joe Carnahan's, unless you wrote it. And that is on Joe Carnahan, because he did write this film, along with Mark Williams and Kurt McLeod. It's stunning to me that you can think that you can take your three leads and put them in a position they can't get out of for a length of time like that, where all they're doing is talking to each other, but we're not adding much, if anything, to what we've already established.
Yeah.
While minor players are going about doing some action in the background.
I'm trying to remember if that bothered me or not. I remember thinking this was a good show. I remember thinking that Frank Grillo... This is interesting, right? Go on YouTube and look up the Frank Grillo workout, and he shows you what he does every single day, right? And that's why he fucking looks like that. This dude is 55, and he looks...
He is stunning. He's
fucking stunning, man. The way that he looks. The hair, the fucking body.
He is...
Like, we're fucking totally fucking jazzing
on
him.
I'm gay as fuck for him,
yeah. So, like, he... That's why it's good. Like, that's why... You're right. I always thought he was like this like dirty looking just like bit player from the Winter Soldier and stuff. He's not. He's actually great.
Jared Butler, who we're not backwards and coming forward saying is not the man he was in 300.
Absolutely.
Right. But he's very good here.
He is good here. He is good here.
I found the right role for him. Yes. He's kind of this world weary kind of assassin dude.
He's like a better Bruce Willis, but European. Way better. Do you know what I mean? Like,
he's actually acting.
Yes, exactly.
And hats off to the Razzies who nominated Bruce Willis for his six fucking films that came out in the last year. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. And then someone who's new to me, Alexis Lauder, who's excellent as the young African-American.
The girl.
Who's the deputy in the town and great in the role, really sells a couple of her scenes in a way. You really want her to win.
Absolutely. And this whole movie with the car chase, sort of like the thing that happens at the beginning, is really exciting, like the opening, which is why it's a bit of a pistol for that down a bit that you talked about.
But I also think the ending is a bit shit. So, like, you would just leave it where we left it.
Fair enough. It's a fine film.
Well, look, if you're into action films, if you're into that kind of crime, not in a Godfellow kind of way, but in a crime action thriller sense, check out Cop Shop.
Totally fine. Yeah, good. All right. Well, my number four is a film by Steven Soderbergh. Mm-hmm. And it's got a cast of like, so Don Cheadle, Benicio Del Toro,
oh, yeah,
Brendan Fraser, Matt Damon for a bit. And it's called, yeah, so No Sudden Move is what it's called.
I watched this movie so long ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right. So everyone, this is set in 1954 Detroit. And it's about some small-time criminals. They are hired to steal a document. And then their heist goes horribly wrong. So the search for the person who hired them and for what purpose, like, sends them, like, winding through all, like, this race-torn, rapidly changing city. It's basically, like, it's a little bit similar in tone to L.A. Confidential, but from the gangster's point of view. And it does take a... it's not as good as L.A. Confidential.
No.
All right, sorry. I'm not trying that, but I'm saying...
Thank God.
In tone and in sort of the way it looks and sort of what it's about, it's a bit like that. It takes a bit of time to get going, but it is very, very well filmed, in my opinion. Well, it's weird that the lens has barrel distortion and stretch at the sides while it's panning.
I saw the same thing.
And I was like, what is that shit? And I was looking it up, and apparently what he's doing...
I honestly thought it was a copy I watched.
This is typical Steven Soderbergh. What he's doing is he's using a lens that you would use... If you were filming in 1954, a lot of productions used. That's
really
what he said. Yeah, it's actually called something. It's called like a... I looked it up. It
looks like jizz in 2021.
Looks like jizz lens, as I believe what it's called. Yes, but this is what he's doing. It's a period accurate lens, but it's got John Hamm in it and stuff like that. It's got quite a few actors.
If I may,
yeah.
Don't do that, Steven Soderbergh.
Is this a new thing you're doing that I am into?
I'm adding something.
Okay, all right.
The show's gonna evolve, Wade.
Okay, sure. But anyway, this wasn't like it is actually. A purposeful recreation. I actually liked it. It's not, again, not the best thing ever, but I enjoyed the whole movie. And I think I like just like these 50s gangster type things. It's kind of cool. So it's not badly filmed at all. I actually recommend it. If you like Steven Soderbergh, this is not one of those crap ones that he does before movies.
Yeah, I think I gave it a soft 3 stars, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's okay. It's a 6 out of 10.
It's fine. And the new Don't Do That! Could be a feature on every episode going forward.
Oh, God. If by evolving the show, you mean make me quit? Sure.
What an evolution.
What a cunt. All right.
My number three is the film which Ridley Scott got really pissy about when no one went to see it, and it bombed like a massive, 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 I don't know, thing that fell to the earth and blew up.
Like a bomb?
Yep.
Go on.
The Last Duel.
Yeah, that's number two on my list.
That's good.
It's fucking good.
It's a good film.
This is a good film. Tell us, Paul.
It's a true story of a woman who defied a nation and made history, or if you prefer, it's
about two cunts in a pissing contest.
Yes, with a woman caught in between. Yes. Rashomon-style film where we see the same film from three different perspectives.
Is that what it's called, Rashomon? Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone, real quick, Matt Damon is some French guy who's a respected knight, and Adam Driver is also a knight somewhere else.
Also respected,
all right? And the implication is that the Adam Driver character raped Matt Damon's wife, and she steps forward.
By Julie Comer?
Yep.
Jodie Comer.
And so she's
Killing Eve Faint?
Oh, yes. I never saw that.
Yeah, it's okay. Good. I've only seen the first 2 seasons.
I've heard it's good. Yeah. Okay. She comes forward, accuses her attacker. It becomes this big thing, and basically the courts can't decide. So Matt Damon's like, I challenge you to a duel.
To a duel.
To the death. And God will
but
decide.
But here's the catch on that. Mm. If Matt Damon loses, then his wife's been lying and she is sentenced to burn at the stake
as a result. Absolutely. Exactly. So it's a lot about that, about these men doing their shit and fuck the women.
Because it was in the 1200s?
Yeah, some shit like that. So pretty gory fight scenes, right? Right?
Did you think? Well, yes. I think there are snatches of sort of battles where it kicks off kind of like Gladiator and people are decapitated and shit's going on and it just cuts away. You're like, whoa, I was just kind of getting into that.
Exactly. And I agree with that. That whole thing, yeah, the Rashomon thing, his point of view.
Yeah,
the film
is structured in three acts.
Three acts. And the first one is Matt Damon, second is Adam Driver, third one is hers.
Yep.
I like how with hers, it's like the truth according to this girl, and then all the words fade out, but the truth.
The truth.
And you're like, oh, okay, so here's what goes on. Anyway, I didn't expect that. I didn't know it was going to be that. That is such a much more interesting thing for me to watch than just some medieval show.
It was long, though. I will criticize the film. I think it was too long. I don't think it needed to be 102.5 hours. I think there were several scenes that could have been cut better.
Yeah.
To make the film a more 130-minute film with the same thing could have been really powerful.
It could, yeah. I think it would. Again, this is your bloated old director type thing, right?
And it, like Stephen King writing novels, no one can edit his shit anymore because he's Ridley Scott.
That's right.
Right. So and the studio just goes, okay, Ridley, Separately, please, just, you know, back off. Please don't threaten us with your cigar and your fucking glass of scotch again.
That's so him. That's so him. That's the thing, though, right? What I was like taking away from this film, though, is that I like Ben Affleck's performance, right? As that weird
I actually don't. He got nominated for a Razzie, and I kind of see where they're coming from.
I thought it was
because he's so over the top.
No, but he's doing that. But check this out, right? These medieval royalty motherfuckers knew how to party, man. Ben Affleck's having orgies with hoes,
yep.
And he's like,
After his wife goes to bed,
and then like Adam Driver turns up to tell him some stuff. He's like, "Hey, man, what's up? Get your pants off. Get up in here.
Get to your dick sucked."
Come exactly. On. It's like, what the fuck? This is Hammer time. So I think, and even Ben Affleck, there's one scene where he gets something doesn't go his way, and he just goes, "Cunt!" Like he just screams it out. I'm like, what?
And there we understand why Wayne liked.
No, but like I laughed at it because like, do they even say that in the 12th Hunt? I don't know, right?
So my biggest problem with the whole film, to be honest, other than the length and the pacing, which is a little long, was the fact that we're meant to buy that all these American actors and British actors are just playing French people.
I have zero problem with that, okay? Because what happens is no one tries to do a French accent. They just speak in whatever they're doing, right?
But when you don't have everyone American and you have some English people,
yeah,
it just throws me completely out.
Really? So this is a good question for you then. That movie, Enemy at the Gates.
Yep.
That was where Jude Law was doing his English accent, even though he was playing a Russian, and everyone was doing all their different accents. I think it didn't hurt it a bit.
It does.
I'm actually fine with that. Really?
It does for me.
What about
all those films?
So, do you need a moment like in
Hunt for Red October? Or I think Valkyrie did the same thing.
Did the same thing where he's writing in German, then he turns into English, and he says, "Okay,
great." I just think that's all I need.
Well, they never did it in Enemy at the Gates.
Yeah, but I don't love Enemy at the Gates.
Really? That's a fucking awesome film.
3-star.
Crazy. All right. So, well,
well before the time of the podcast, but I would have the same qualm.
Really?
Yep, I'm consistent. Like, you just, when Matt Damon's going, "Jesus, fuck yeah."
Fuck off, dude. So he turned Aussie.
That's my point. You laugh at it because it's not correct.
But you get the point of the scene, though, and you don't get this sort of, am I judging his accent? You get straight in there.
I don't need them to act in French, but I need them to do something where the device in the film shows us that we're not caring about accents
I don't
anymore.
Need that at all. I just need to, but I understand, Paul. Yeah. Paul's this guy.
I think the final duel between the
excellent
is brilliant. And go so far beyond what I was expecting. Holy shit.
I know, right? The way it went, like, holy crap. And this is it. It's a good film. It's just way too long.
Yeah.
That's it.
So I said, like,
I reckon you'll see a lot of that shit.
You excise 20 minutes off this film, it would have been way better received.
That's why people fucking didn't go. No, maybe it's not. But
I think he's got not the point about everyone's looking at their iPhones, because then they'll all watch your film later, Ridley.
That's all.
Sir Ridley, I'm sorry.
No.
That's an old man railing at the fucking clouds in the sky.
Absolutely. And you know what else? I reckon if he advertised that it was that Rashomon style somehow, I would have watched it much sooner if I'd known that. I don't know.
I know my brother hated this movie because he wasn't prepared for that. So
yeah,
you're right.
I like the gimmick though. So anyway, there you are.
Cool.
Okay. My number three is a film, one of those ones where I always wanted to watch this film because everyone's seen it but me. And I just came back to it finally. It's Dazed and Confused.
Wow. You've never seen this?
Nope. Speaking of Richard Linklater.
Okay.
This is just a coming-of-age film about rowdy teenagers in Austin, and it's got fucking Matt Damon and Ben Affleck and... Not Matt Damon. Ben Affleck and...
Matthew McConaughey.
Jason London. And what I noticed about it was I was watching it going,
Mila Jovovich.
Mila Jovovich, of course. Yes. But why... What I wanted to know was like, okay, so this is your standard. This is almost the template for the, you know, Hollywood movie. I mean, the high school movie in Hollywood, right? Don't you think it's like it's all that sort of thing?
I'm not a Linklater fan.
Well, really, it struck me as a early Kevin Smithy kind of film. In fact,
it's about the same time.
It's about the same Clips. Time, and even like I think Jason London and what's her name, the girl with the squeaky voice, Joey Lauren Adams.
Right. Yeah,
name,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yes.
So all those people are in it, and all the characters are like him in it. So I didn't know this is the movie where Matthew McConaughey said, "All right."
Yes.
This is that movie. I'm like, oh, that's where it came from. So I actually quite liked it. Parker Posey as well. I'm a big fan of hers for some reason. Yeah, I like her. I like her. And Ben Affleck is playing this really shitty bully kind of character. And I find it quite funny. So I think what he's done here is that...
Wayne endorses bullying.
No, I don't endorse bullying. But the way he's playing this like asshole character who eventually gets his comeuppance is actually entertaining to watch. So I'm fine with that.
Fair enough.
I think he's just entertaining you. It's about nothing. Nothing happens in the film.
No, really. This is my big problem with Linklater films.
Is that
almost
what it is?
Nothing.
Yeah,
none of his films about anything.
For real. And it ends up, again, it's just like it's
slice
the feeling.
Alive.
Slice of life. Yeah. It's okay. Anyway, there you are.
All right. We know what your number two is. My number two is a New Zealand film from director James Ashcroft. It's called Coming Home in the Dark. And this is basically follows a school teacher.
Yeah.
And his wife are taking their boys on a trip somewhere in New Zealand, in the country of New Zealand, and two ne'er-do-wells come across them and basically accost them.
Okay.
As the film progresses, it turns out that those ne'er-do-wells have a connection to the school teacher, and the film flows from there. This is dark. It's absorbing.
Really?
It is short. It's 93 minutes long.
Yeah.
And that is exactly the length it needs to be. There is no scene in this film that drags on too long. It is incredibly well acted, particularly by Daniel Gillies as the character Mandrake, who is terrifying.
Is he known anywhere?
I've never heard this guy before.
It's like an indie film?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Yeah, okay.
But oh my God, it's on Netflix right now in Australia. I'm not sure if it's in the US in the same way or the UK.
What's it called?
Coming Home in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I saw it on a couple of best of the year horror films. It's not horror, it's just an intense thriller.
Thriller, okay.
And like, what would I do in this scenario? There is a spine-chilling moment in this movie. I'm going to give you the line of dialogue, but not tell you what happens around it.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon that's the moment you'll look back on and say, I should have done something.
Okay.
Maybe not word for word, but that's the sentiment. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my God.
Really?
This film is every...
Is it harrowing?
Yeah.
Oh, see. Yeah, it's going to be tough for me.
You would hate it in that sense, but I think you'd appreciate for how well this film is made.
Well, the way you're speaking of it, I want to say well done NZ for busting out a good sort of indie sort of whatever.
I hope Sam and Machu and co have seen this movie. Mm-hmm. Because if you haven't, get on it, boys. I'm sure they have. I'm sure they have.
All right, cool. Nice one. Yes, my number two was The Last Duel. So, Paul, you're number two.
No, that was my number two.
Oh, shit.
So I'm going to run back through it again very quickly. Then 10 through 2 and revealing my number one. Number 10, Red Fucking Piece of Shit Notice. Number 9, Resident Evil : Welcome to Raccoon City. 8, Smaller Journey Repair. 7, Antlers. 6, Time Bandits. 5, The French Dispatch. 4, Cop Shop. 3, The Last Duel. 2, Coming Home in the Dark. And my number 1 is the sequel to the zombie film, which Wayne refused to watch, Wormwood, Apocalypse, from Kaya Roach-Turner, and written by he and his brother. And this film is fucking awesome.
Give me like the fucking premise. Give us like
awesome is too strong a word. This film is really fun. Yeah. Really, really fun. I had a great time. Film, and Wayne, for the first time in my entire life, this is also really sad.
What?
I saw this film by myself in a cinema session.
I do that all the time.
Really? Yeah. I've never been to a session before.
Are you shitting me? Yes, and you have.
I've been the only person.
Oh, sorry. You didn't go see the movie by yourself. There was no one else in the cinema.
Yes.
Oh.
No one else.
Yeah, that's happened once.
Me only. There was one other ticket sold when I bought my ticket.
And he didn't turn up.
Clearly he didn't turn up because when the movie finished, I assumed there was this person behind me off to the right the whole way through the film. Not that it changed anything about the film for me. But when the film finished, and I watched all the way through the end credits just to make sure, because another blessed thing about this film was 88 minutes long. It's over and done. Hooray.
Short zombie film's a good one.
Film makes not just short film doesn't have to be bloated to 110 minutes because reasons. Yeah. Right? I waited till that. Lights all come up, stood up, looked around, no one there.
Wow.
And I didn't see the guy walk out or girl walk out before me.
What's that session?
6 p.m.
Fuck. Really? What night?
Opening night.
Opening. Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's...
Well, we're in a pandemic here. Well,
I wouldn't have even known this was there if you hadn't told me. So I don't think they're playing a lot on marketing.
Yeah, this is a sequel to Wormwood Road of the Dead, which I interviewed the director way back when we were doing interviews on the show and we're kind of chasing that kind of thing. Lovely bloke, really nice, enjoyed his conversation. And so to see this film be what it is, I can only imagine it's really low budget, but it looks so much better than it should.
Yeah.
Because how good the effects are, how well put together the limited but very impressive production design is. And it basically follows a bunch of survivors in outback Australia during a zombie apocalypse where the zombies give off this gas when they breathe, / whatever they expel, because breathe with the wrong word, that powers engines.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So the only way to move around, because fuel is long gone, is by harnessing these zombies.
How do you do it? Do you grab one and then make them breathe into the tank?
Basically.
Well, that's original.
And it's gory and it's so over the top. It's ridiculous. It's fantastic fun.
No, but see, here's the thing. So look, as much as I don't like zombie films, I love like local industry, right? So if this guy, if he made that movie, the first one, and then he got a greenlit sequel, he's doing great. I think it's cool. I think I like the idea of that, you know? So it's not my genre, but good. Keep making them, man.
Look, I know I'm down for this kind of shit more than most people are,
yeah.
But if you're not at all a fan of zombies, and you're not, so don't bother. But if you are at all interested in that genre and horror genre, then you must see this film. And please, go see it at the cinema.
No,
I think it's only out here in Australia right now. But if it makes cinemas around the world after this, then see Wormwood Apocalypse, especially if you enjoyed Road of the Dead, because it's more of the same. Maybe not quite as good because we're used to it now. There's a hybrid character who can control the zombies, and that's a lot of fun.
How's this? I'm going to buy a ticket and not go. I just want to support that.
That would make you an awesome individual.
Right? So there you go. I did a lot, actually. Okay. Nice one. My number...
10 through 2?
10 through 2. Okay. 10 was The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Number 9, The 355. 8, The Wedding Ringer. 7, Red Notice. 6, The Amazing Spider-Man. 5, Last Looks. 4, No Sudden Move. 3, Dazed and Confused. 2, The Last Duel. And my number 1, Paul. You're going to love hate this. Paul often accuses me of doing a thing that I sometimes do, where if I don't expect to like a film, I'll put it on one of my dual screens in the man cave here and play Sniper Elite 4 on the other screen. So I did that with this film, right? I opened up this film on the right monitor, and on the left I booted up Sniper Elite 4. And Paul,
you stopped at Sniper Elite 4.
I watched every frame of this film, and Sniper Elite 4 went unplayed. That's right.
I only shot 12 people.
Seriously, the movie's House of Gucci.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so now Ridley Scott, which I didn't know till the end.
Wow. Your Ridley Scott has 1 and 2.
I know, right?
Holy shit, he should charge his fucking Scotch glass to you.
I'm telling you, right? Ridley Scott still... But again, Paul, it's slightly long. That's what's going on here. Ridley Scott does a good movie. He just overstays his welcome, Marty Scorsese. Right? So that's what's happening now. These old directors just like the sound of their own voice and they're like, fuck it. And
like I said, they can't edit him.
You can't edit him. No. It's fucking Ridley. So anyway, this is about, I didn't know this, and this is the best thing about the film, right? So it's actually about the actual history of the Gucci house,
right,
and how the family came to power, then fell, and Tom Ford and everything. I have a passing interest in this. When Tom Ford was big in
you
the
have 80s, a passing interest in fashion?
No, well, in the Gucci story, because Tom Ford
in
is
the case. Fuck off!
Tom Ford is an ex-model, very good-looking man, and he decided he would try his hand at CEOing, and he brought Gucci out of this horrible doldrum into the fashion house it is today. It's billions of dollars worth, right? He now makes movies.
Or he made Nocturnal Animals.
Yes,
right?
He now makes movies. That's who this guy is.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Just because you're a CEO of a company / ex-model doesn't mean you can make a movie.
Apparently, he said, every move I ever make, everyone says to me, don't do that. When he tried to be a CEO, don't do that. When he tried to be a model, don't do that. When he tried to be a filmmaker, don't do that. And he succeeded at everything.
Wow.
So,
not that he's made a lot of follow-ups to Nocturnal Animals, I might add.
I think he's got one other film. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, this movie goes all the way up to that Tom Ford bit. I didn't expect that. So I'm like, ooh, okay. But more than that, the film has Adam Driver, Lady Gaga, who I didn't recognize in the role.
Apparently, you're not going to recognize Jared Leto.
Dude, that is the thing. Halfway through the film, I'm like, what the fuck? That dude is Jared Leto, and it's amazing. I don't ever have any doubts about him being a good actor. He's really, really good. I don't really like 30 Seconds to Mars or any of his music,
sure,
but whatever. I'm just saying, this guy is actually the real thing. He's fucking amazing, right? Al Pacino's in it, and a few other people.
Hoo-ah!
Right? So beautifully filmed. So beautiful. The sharpness of the focus and the awareness of the color in the frame is actually, like, really cool
nice.
Looking. Yes, it's all about fashion, so sure, I'm a fucking bitch, but but this is the cool thing, Paul, and this is why you won't like it, right? This is a great soundtrack. Sometimes they're doing an Italian version of a Monkees song,
oh,
right?
God.
Sometimes there's a wedding scene with this ha ha ha, like this fucking organ music, and I'm like, I know that organ music. It's like the intro to that song Faith by George Michael. And then it is that song. They start playing Faith, even though it's set in the 1978s or some shit, right?
I hate that shit.
No, no, dude. Fucking great effect. They'll drop Enya in. They'll drop fucking out of context, not 70s shit, but it works beautifully. And I'm very impressed that Ridley can do that. I'm very, very impressed. So some of the most beautifully filmed movies I've ever seen, this one here, right?
Wow.
Not in an obvious way, though. Not in a spectacular way. In a fuck, that looks great way. So Jeremy Irons also really awesome in this film. And there's this one scene where, like, the girl in the movie is just given, like, free reign in Gucci because Al Pacino's the owner. He's like, anything you see in here is yours. Family discount. And I got a bit hard. So...
All right, we probably need to end this review here before we get to 20-minute territory.
Absolutely, we're done here. So yes, House of Gucci, I don't recommend it for everyone. I don't think anyone will like it as much as me, but it is my favorite of the 10.
Okay.
So there you are.
Fair enough. Wow. All right, well, going to have to check it out on that basis.
Word.
Alone. All right, that's our list. No honorable mentions, obviously, for a top 10 last one. Let's get straight into your feedback on the topic at hand in a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about. Pop 10. Talk about. Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Jonathan Kidd. Finally watched Dances with Wolves.
Awesome.
That was a great lesson in the hubris of Kevin Costner.
Do you think he liked it?
Basically, here's the shtick is I invite the Facebook community to give us a one sentence review of the last of a film they recently watched.
Yeah,
that was
his. Okay, good. It was a good show, man. It's long.
From Wesley Younger from the Via VHS podcast said, "I still don't know what the fuck Eternals was."
Agree.
Lee Allen Thomas said, "The Alpinist. If you have this on your watch list, please don't watch it on your phone. Needs the biggest screen."
The Alpinist.
Yeah, it was in my top 10 films last year.
Yeah, what was it again?
Guy Climbing Mountains.
That's right. It was like free solo. Yeah,
cool. Yeah, absolutely. Check it out. Robert Stewart, aka Stu from the Stu World Order podcast, who's going to be a guest on the show in short order, Hatchet 2. I almost didn't watch this because Hatchet was so bad, but I am a sucker for Danielle Harris.
Did you write this review?
The sequel was actually tons of fun. I was shocked.
Really?
Yeah. Not going to go through the rest of his posts because we're getting really one sentence. I gave him three. David Power, top level page of the show and moderator of the Facebook community said, "Me, you, madness. This morally bankrupt, insultingly awful and offensively gaudy vanity project by Louise Linton is just face-meltingly terrible and should be deleted from existence."
Is that David Powell? That motherfucker is literary, man.
That's very
good. What is that film? I've never even heard of it.
Never right. Chef Ben Randall said, "Venom, colon, let there be carnage." And he wrote colon out there. Excellent. Good work, mate.
Oh, dear.
"Looked like the writers / directors / producers had a whiteboard where they were discussing all the possible ideas for this movie. Then they took the absolute worst ones and made the movie out of that."
Movie sucked for sure. No doubt.
No one's arguing. My brother Adam said, "Student body. WTF, I was hoping we'd be taken back to the 80s, 90s of slasher horror films with people dying one by one and trying to guess who comes next and who the killer is. I got none of this. Don't ever watch this piece of trash."
What's it called?
Student body.
Student body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although
like
he did suggest I should make you watch this film.
Fucking fuck.
You can't handle the truth.
Brad Hart just... from the Cinema Guys podcast, who I was on sometime soon on their patron-only feed. We're going to review the three Apes films, Rise, Dawn, and War. Good times there. Thank you, Brad, for having me on. Nightmare Alley. This film looked amazing. The cinematography and acting are top-notch. It takes the story a while to get going, and it burns slowly through its 150-minute runtime. The film could have been much shorter and still had the same effect.
See, a little of a theme, isn't it?
Pretty much what we had said in our review as well.
A lot of people like that show, though.
It got nominated for Best Picture, I think.
Look, it's good looking.
It's not going to win.
It's good. No, it's not
in a fucking million years, it's not going to win.
It won't. No. But it's good looking.
Brentley Oliver said, "Flee, an emotional story of hope."
Okay, Flee.
I don't know that one.
Me neither.
Here you go. Our review for next week, Wayne, Uncharted. Jamie Davies, last film I saw was Uncharted. Surprisingly enjoyable for a game adaptation despite the lack of Tash.
Tash. Okay, so I've never played the game, but I'm interested because... isn't it like every video game movie sucks? Isn't that the thing?
Well, let's be honest, they do.
I liked Resident Evil, the first one.
That's also probably my highlight as well. Sam Hurley for the Movie Reviews and 20Qs podcast. And a patron to the show said, "Tinder Swindler. Insane. If I say anything more, it'll be a spoiler."
Tinder Swindler. Okay. Yeah. All right, there you go.
It's on Netflix, I do believe. I think this is the first time contributor. Ray Richardson said, "Venom, let there be carnage. Tough to find a bigger pile of dog do."
Most deaf. And welcome aboard, Ray.
Machu. I'm not even trying to say your last name, Machu. And I believe me, I understand what it's like with
my
last name.
Is it not Pichu? Sorry.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Everyone, you've experienced the world's most inexpensive comedy. But courtesy me. Oh, Jesus. Ooh, damn. Okay.
Wow, okay. Nightmare Alley again. Only two things scare me: nuclear war and dodgy motherfucking carnies. Small hands smell like cabbage.
What is this review? What's the movie?
We're idiotically going to have him on our show. Ensure that was our last review this week.
All right.
Thank you so much, everybody. Got back to us. Sorry I couldn't get through all of you. There was good 50 responses there in the last 24
about
hours.
About 1,000 roughly, yeah.
Like, fucking
Paul,
13.
Paul read them all.
Shut up, you bitch. That's the only one that makes you consistently laugh. Look, you know what? We didn't, after all our discussion before we hit record, we still didn't agree on what we're going to do next week, so we can't tell you.
We don't know. We'll come up with it. We'll, you know.
Wayne, how do the people get back in touch with us? So everything they need to know. Need to know about the show.
You can either just go to thecountdown.com. Is that right? Thecountdownpodcast.com.
Thecountdownpodcast.com.
Right.
Excellent.
Glad or you, looking or at you the can website. Just Google us up, you know, and just say, and find all our socials or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. Also, follow us on Podbean where we host the show. And it's on thecountdownpodcast.com website, but hit up the Facebook community link is in the show notes. And that is it for today. Episode 359, our top 10, last 10 to kick off 2022. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Tits.
Just you are.
Just tits.
You are. We'll catch you next time.
See ya.